Welcome back to the Deep Dive. So if you've ever sat in a strategic planning session, you definitely know that moment.
Oh, yeah.
The quantitative data, you know, the spreadsheets, the cost projections, all the numbers, it just runs headlong into the qualitative stuff.
The messy stuff.
The messy human factors. We're talking organizational culture, employee morale, stakeholder resistance, even just gut feelings.
And that collision, that's where so many great plans, well, they just fail. I mean, strategic decisions always require change, and change is always met with friction.
Right.
So managers need a tool that doesn't ignore all that human complexity, but actually simplifies it, makes it visible, and crucially, makes it comparable to the hard numbers.
Okay, let's unpack this then. Our mission today is focused on that exact tool, force field analysis, or FFA.
Or FA, yeah.
We're going to dive into the process that was pioneered by the social psychologist Kurt Lewin and really look at how businesses use it to gain some clarity, to quantify resistance, and to make these really difficult decisions without just, you know, relying on instinct.
Well, at its core, FFA is a structured tool. Mm-hmm. Its entire purpose is to help managers evaluate if a proposed change is even feasible.
So it's about informed, balanced decision making.
Exactly. It forces you to look beyond the shiny benefits and really assess the true cost and the difficulty of actually getting it done.
The theoretical foundation, which comes from Lewin, it sounds almost deceptively simple. He argued that any current situation, anything happening right now in an organization,
whether it's good or bad,
right, high efficiency or, say, stagnating sales, is maintained by this delicate equilibrium of opposing forces, like a boulder balanced perfectly on a flat surface.
That's the key image right there. The status quo, the way things are, it's held in place because the forces pushing for change and the forces resisting it are, for now, perfectly matched.
So the boulder only moves.
The boulder only moves when the forces supporting the new direction become, you know, significantly stronger than the ones pushing back. And FFA, it brings structure to what would otherwise be a pretty chaotic debate.
Which is invaluable during a big transition.
Absolutely.
Okay, so to even begin using this, the very first step, it seems, demands some real precision. We're talking about the definition of the proposed change.
Yes. This has to be crystal clear. It has to be stated as a simple, factual objective, not a vague question.
Why is that so important?
Well, that precision, it just eliminates ambiguity.
Mm.
If your proposed change is something fuzzy, like improving employee happiness, everyone's going to have a different idea of what that means.
Okay, so it has to be specific. Like, implement a flexible 4-day work week for all non-production staff.
Exactly. Or one of the examples from our sources was transfer 60% of production facilities to an overseas location by Q4. That gives you a definitive, measurable target to actually analyze.
Got it. So once that target is set, we start identifying the factors in this sort of tug of war. And we start with the driving forces.
Mm-hmm.
These are the factors that are pushing for the change, the reasons you want to move that boulder in the first place.
Yeah, these are typically the positive motivators, either internal or external. Things like guaranteed financial benefits, or maybe seizing a new technology before a competitor does.
Or just keeping up with competitive pressures.
Right, reducing overhead,
yeah.
Things like that. And these strong driving forces, they almost always connect back to the big high-level corporate goals, don't they?
Strategic survival,
yeah.
Ensuring long-term sustainability, or, you know, huge cost reductions, they're the big ticket items.
They are, but you have to immediately list the other side. The restraining forces, the factors that are actively pulling back.
This is the risk side of the equation.
Absolutely.
So these are the obstacles, the challenges, all the resistance we kind of fear, employee concerns, financial risks, maybe a lack of institutional knowledge.
Regulatory restrictions, logistical nightmares.
Yeah.
And ignoring these strong restraining forces is probably the single most common reason a project fails.
Because if you don't see it coming.
If you don't acknowledge and actually try to quantify the risk of, say, an operational disruption, you won't budget for it.
Mm.
You won't allocate the time needed to mitigate it. These forces have to be understood from the start.
Okay, so here's where it gets really interesting for me. The analysis moves from just being a list to being, well, genuine strategic intelligence.
Yeah.
We have to quantify the qualitative.
Right.
How do you take something as fluid as employee morale and turn it into a score that you can compare against guaranteed cost reduction?
That is the whole function of the weighting system. Each force, whether it's driving or restraining, gets assigned a numerical weight. It's usually on a scale from 1, which is a weak influence, to 5, a very strong, decisive influence.
And that's how we transform these soft opinions into something that looks like comparable data.
That's the idea. It forces objectivity into the conversation.
So let's break that weighting down. Because a 5 on the restraining side, that must mean something pretty catastrophic if you ignore it.
Oh, absolutely. Whereas a 2 might be something you can just, you know, absorb. So if we stick with that example of moving production overseas, a score of 5 for driving force might be access to a brand new market segment. Huge upside.
And a 5 on the other side.
A 5 for a restraining force might be severe regulatory hurdles and known political instability in the target country. A potential project killer.
So if employee concerns about job security scores a 4, which is a strong restraining force, what does that actually translate to, in practical terms, for the risk of implementation?
It translates to a high implementation cost and probable delays. A score of 4 suggests that this one factor will actively derail your timeline if you don't deal with it head on.
Whereas a 2.
A score of 2, on the other hand, might just be some minor grumbling or a temporary logistical hiccup. The higher the score, the more resources you have to commit to neutralizing that specific factor.
Okay, so we define the change, we brainstorm the forces, we assign the weightings, and those forces rated 4 or 5, those are the strategic tension points.
Mm-hmm.
What happens after we've tallied up the results?
Step 4 is just totaling the scores. You sum up all the driving forces, and then you compare that number to the total of all the restraining forces.
So if, say, your driving forces total 13 and your restraining forces total 10, the change looks feasible.
It appears feasible, yes.
But wait a minute, 3 points isn't a massive gap. And what if you had like 10 tiny driving forces, each scoring a 1, giving you a total of 10, but just one catastrophic restraining force that scored a 5?
Yeah.
The totals would still suggest it's a go, but that 1 5 could kill the entire project. How does FFA stop us from just ignoring that one huge red flag?
That is exactly where critical thinking has to trump the simple math. The numerical score is just the starting point for a conversation.
Oh, okay.
When the scores are that close, or when any single force scores a 4 or a 5, that's a signal that the initial plan is just too risky. You don't just proceed because 13 beats 10. The score, and especially any high individual scores, they demand intervention.
So a small margin or one really high score, that requires strategic action. And what are the company's options here?
Well, they have to achieve what Lewin called disequilibrium. They have to tip the scales. So that means they either have to increase the weight of the driving forces or, much more commonly, they dedicate resources to reduce the weight of the restraining ones.
Okay, so give me an example.
If the main restraining force is a high setup cost, which you scored a 5, the business immediately goes and explores financing options.
Yeah.
The goal is to shift that score down to a 2 or a 3 before they make the final call.
Or if the big restraining force is employee resistance to new tech, instead of trying to make the financial upside even bigger, you might roll out a massive training program.
Exactly. You invest in training to lower that resistance score from a 4 down to a 1. It guides where you should spend your resources before you even launch. FFA forces you to visualize your action plan before you commit the capital.
This raises a really important question for me. Why does this highly structured tool beat just listing pros and cons on a spreadsheet, which, let's be honest, is what most companies do?
Because that pros and cons list is static. It treats every single item equally. A minor risk gets the same billing as a massive strategic advantage. FFA is dynamic.
How so?
Well, for one, it fundamentally improves communication and teamwork. Because the weighting and the reasoning are all laid out and quantified, people from different departments, HR, finance, operations, can all engage with the decision using the same framework.
So it reduces confusion and gets more buy-in?
It increases support for the final data-driven action plan. And the second big advantage is what you said earlier, actionable insights.
It doesn't just tell you if you should change, but how you must change.
Exactly. By identifying the most influential factors, the 4s and 5s FFA points managers, directly to the specific areas that need immediate attention and investment.
And its versatility is why it's such a cornerstone tool. I can see it in strategic planning for expansion, restructuring, looking at new markets.
Sure, but it's also huge in change management. If a company's restructuring, the restraining forces are always going to involve employee concerns, cultural shifts. Mm. FFA lets you forecast those internal barriers.
And design the transition plan around them.
You design the plan to minimize that quantifiable resistance. And it's even used in functional areas. HR uses it to assess new programs. Finance uses it to evaluate large capital investments by comparing the upside against the implementation risk.
But you know, what's fascinating here is the trade-off. While FFA is all about promoting objectivity, we have to talk about its Achilles heel. It has limitations.
Oh, it does. The single biggest drawback is the potential for some serious subjectivity.
Right.
We are asking managers who are often already really invested in the success of the proposed change to rate their own obstacles.
Ah, so the risk is that a department head might, say, score their own team's resistance to training lower than it really is, just to make their project look more feasible.
Precisely. Managers can, maybe even unintentionally, exaggerate the driving forces they control or downplay the restraining forces they don't like. And that just skews the entire result to support their preferred outcome.
Which can make the whole evaluation useless if you're not careful.
Totally. And since it boils everything down to this one numerical comparison, it also risks oversimplification, right? It can ignore these deeper systemic issues in an organization.
I mean, you can't reduce a massive corporate merger down to just the sum of two columns.
You can't. Okay. And it also assumes all these forces are static, that they're stable. But in today's business environment, a new competitor or a sudden regulatory change can shift a restraining force from a 2 to a 5 overnight.
And FFA doesn't have a built-in mechanism to, you know, dynamically update that score.
No, it doesn't.
So what does this all mean for you, our listener? If we accept that subjectivity is the main risk here, how can someone use FFA effectively and actually improve its validity?
The answer is rigor and transparency. First, you have to ensure diverse participation. You need to get stakeholders from various levels in the room. Junior employees, middle managers, maybe even outside experts.
To get a wider range of perspectives and reduce that single person bias.
Exactly. And second, the weightings can never, ever be arbitrary.
They need to be backed by data.
Yes. Yeah. You demand that participants justify their scores with evidence. You can't just say employee morale is a 5. You need to show the recent survey results, the retention rates, or historical examples to back that score up.
It makes the scores less about opinion and more about objective analysis.
Right. And finally, and this is so important, it should only be one piece of the strategic puzzle.
It's not the sole decision-making tool.
Absolutely not. It should be a mandatory input alongside your financial models and your market analysis. It's a powerful tool, but only when it's treated with that kind of analytical discipline.
That has been a deep dive into force field analysis. It really is a powerful tool for assessing feasibility, for visualizing and quantifying that fundamental fight between the potential benefits and the necessary risks.
It's all about making sure your potential upside decisively outweighs your pain points.
And preparing for that battle ahead of time.
We spend a lot of time on how subjectivity in the weighting is the main limitation. That point where personal bias can just hijack an otherwise objective process.
Mm-hmm.
So here's a thought for you to take away.
Yeah.
If you were implementing FFA in your organization and your team was made up of managers who were already heavily invested in the project succeeding, how would you structure that process?
Right. How would you get honest weightings?
How would you ensure the numbers reflect reality rather than just reinforcing the existing enthusiasm? Maybe you'd use anonymous surveys or blind scoring. Perhaps bring in external auditors.
That's a fascinating challenge.
It is. Something to really mull over as you plan your next major change.
Thank you for sharing your expertise today. We'll see you next time.